we all have these really powerful love stories in our past, and just because we have someone we love dearly today doesn't mean that we have to automatically erase those past feelings. And I think he's thought about that, and I'm obviously not going to leave him for a crackhead hooker, and we both know that what we have now is forever, so he's pretty comfortable with it all.
I've always wanted a movie queen to call my very own, that bright and shining star I've worshipped from afar, came down to earth to be with me tonight. Oh.
You're listening to The Feast of Fools, a refreshing mix of cocktail recipes, gossip, and interviews with artists, writers, and drag queens, and sometimes all the above.
On today's show, we have an interview with Josh Kilmer Purcell, author of I Am Not Myself These Days, a memoir which chronicles his love life as a drag queen in New York City in the 90s.
Stay tuned for this very fascinating interview. I'm Fausto Furnos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
Busby Berkeley ate his heart out over you. You on my arm, Betty Grable lost her charm, and Florence Ziegfeld's follies looked like Brooklyn Zoo. I've always wanted a movie queen to call my very own.
Hello.
Hi, is this Josh?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Fausto Furnos.
And Mark Fillion.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
Hi, are you relaxed? Are you comfortable?
I am. Can I ask, do you edit or is it all live?
Well, it's pre-recorded live, but we sort of do it real time. And
Okay, good.
So we try not to edit.
To edit as little possible, but if there's like something that you feel uncomfortable with,
right,
or... just let us know. Yeah. We'll try to do the best to accommodate you.
Well, I'll stop drinking now then.
Well, actually, speaking of...
Actually.
Our guest today is Josh Kilmer Purcell, author of I Am Not Myself These Days, and he was well known in the New York City club scene, I guess? Nightclub?
Drag scene? Club scene?
Yeah, club scene.
For his drag persona, or character, or what would you consider it, Josh?
Alter ego.
His nemesis.
Aquadisiac.
And on today's show, we're going to be making a cocktail in honor of our guest, Josh, the Aquavelva.
And since, Josh, in your book, you love vodka so much, right? And that's your drink of choice, right?
It is. And I'm really disappointed you didn't give me notice, because I'd have been shaking one up right here.
Well.
instead, I'm drinking seltzer.
Well, you could pretend like you are making one.
That's true. I'll pretend myself is vodka.
So what we're going to start with today is you get some nice organic mint leaves. You want to get organic ones because they don't have pesticides on them.
Yeah, and because we won't have any chemicals in a drag queen drink.
especially poisonous ones.
Poisonous ones.
So you take the mint leaves and you pretty much just kind of like tear them up into small pieces. Mm-hmm. And put them into a mortar and pestle. And you basically want just enough to fill up the bottom of whatever mortar and pestle you have. And you pour in about...
Put a Vicodin in there.
Oh, do you have any? We'll get some from Victoria Lamar. Victoria Lamar's got some.
Okay, good.
And we put in about a tablespoon or so of vodka. You want sort of Grey Goose or top shelf,
Make a paste. We're just making a paste at this point in time.
Yeah, and if you're broke... And you want to use the cheap vodka and pour it through a Brita filter several times? Go right ahead. And you basically beat up the mint leaves until they're into a nice thick green paste, and you pour that into a mason jar.
I would use a little bit as eyeshadow while you're doing it.
And let's see. We pour this into the mason jar, and you let that sit overnight
to infuse,
and you can let it sit for how long, Mark?
Indefinitely.
Yeah, you don't want it. You want to take it out because once it gets into a nice green color, it sort of looks like absinthe, but it's a minty vodka flavor absinthe that doesn't get you hallucinating. Damn.
Well, with the Vicodin in there, you might see a little something.
And so you pour that into, so the next day you have a shot glass and you put some ice into that.
This is just cruel listening to this.
I am so sorry.
I'm sorry, Josh, but the reason why we're doing this is we're kind of known as we're doing our little martini cast, and since you're such a big drinker, we thought we'd tease you a little bit.
I might have to take breaks to wipe the drool away.
So we have the, and I'm sorry, I was meant to say an old-fashioned glass. Because people can't really see what I'm doing here, so you just have to like use the theater for your mind.
What do you call me, old?
Old fashioned.
Honey, I think we're probably older than you.
So you pour your vodka in. Mark, what else goes in this thing?
A little dash of some blue curacao.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like aqua velva.
And you put a little blue curacao. It's a very manly drink.
Sure it is.
For a drag, built for, strong enough for a man, but built for a drag queen.
How does it smell? Could you put a little, like, you know, in your panty liner and things?
Well, it's very minty, but it's made with fresh mint, so it has this, like, wonderful...
fresh aroma.
And it's, you know, scary
to, like,
green.
Mouthwash.
And, you know, so
and
it's
blue.
Like...
Let me have some.
Okay.
That sounds good. And coming through your pores the next day is probably...
It'll
very refreshing.
Very fresh.
It's
very
fresh. I'm always for detoxifying drinks.
Now that we have our cocktail. So let's talk about you now, Josh. Since now that we're all loosened up and we're drinking a little bit, tell us about the fish boobs. We want to know about fish boobs.
Did you see pictures and all?
Yes, I did see pictures. Yeah. They look fabulous.
Thank you. I don't even. Sometime when I was in Atlanta, some hallucinatory stage, I got the idea of doing these fish breasts. So I just went to one of those craft stores, you know, and got those clear plastic holiday bubble things. You're supposed to fill them up with little teddy bears and all that sort of stuff.
And some fake snow and whatnot.
Exactly, yeah.
But it was like a sphere designed to hold liquid in it.
Exactly, exactly. There actually was two half spheres.
I see. And you just kind of screwed them together?
Well, I took each one. I had backs made for each one, little mirrored backings.
Oh.
With a little hole and a plug that I could fill with water. The fish didn't live in there permanently. I got to get that out there for all the and PETA people.
Mike B, the vegetarian bodybuilder who listens to the show, he's going to start splashing blood on your books.
Oh, no.
Well, I want to know. So, I mean, were you like in an aquarium at a pet shop, and you said, you know, this looks good in the tank, but it'll look even better on my chest.
Honestly, it came from those. Did you ever see how those bikini display models are in department stores? They're like little plastic torsos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I actually bought one of those from a department store. That was the very first aqua. It was this plastic torso strapped to my front with goldfish and condoms where the breasts, inside the breasts. Oh, man, that looked really bad. I'm so afraid of old drag pictures coming up. You know they will.
Well, do you think... We were asking Misunderstood, who's a good friend of ours and a friend of yours.
I shouldn't say his name. Should I?
No.
Okay.
She doesn't want to know. Edit. No, but we wanted to know sort of like, what was your relationship with Misunderstood? And
why would she say... Good Lord, you're getting into Oprah territory.
You have to dish the dirt first, and then we'll tell you what she said.
Yeah. That's what Oprah does, you know.
Yeah, I know.
She's like, have another cocktail.
Misunderstood. She actually gave me my first job in New York, and that was the Lucky Chang's Drag Queen contest thing.
Which you won 6 weeks in a row?
6 weeks in a row.
Now, was that a fixed contest?
It was, because I invited all my friends, of course.
Oh, so you packed the audience with your friends.
Yeah, I'm not dumb. You know, I'm just blonde.
So you're not a natural blonde, though, right?
Not anymore, no.
Yeah, because in the cover of the book, your hair is black, like mine.
Yeah.
Well, not blue, but, you know.
So that was, Lucky Chang's was the first thing. And we were all supposed to get, I don't know, like $100 plus sweet and sour pork.
Oh, you got fed.
And the sweet and sour pork came
you'd
from
think
Misunderstood?
We'd get fed, but Misunderstood, you know, she was always first in line, and by the end we got like a little tiny piece of sweet. And
you got a fortune
and
cookie.
A whole lot of pork.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And what was it, you know, and during the day you worked as a art director?
Yeah, in an advertising agency.
And so did you invite all the people from your job to see you at night in drag? Or
all the time. They were so sick of me.
So those are the people who are sort of like rooting for you, or where was your posse coming from?
Yeah, they were from the advertising agency. And I mean, it was funny because there was you know, they were like old school New Yorkers and things. But, you know, it's advertising. There's all cool people, too. So
they were enchanted that you were like a business person by day or an art person by day and a drag queen by night?
I was like their school mascot for the agency.
Did they ever invite you like to come into the office as Aqua Desia in drag and for Halloween?
I would never. Daytime drag is just a no-no.
Too much bright light.
Plus sensible heels. What's the point?
So no one ever said, "Oh, we're having a party. You should come."
I always did the Christmas party every year. Mm. So I shut up.
And what was the like sort of experience of being in an office environment in drag?
Well, the party was always somewhere else. So I never showed up to work. I mean, except for the stray eyelash or something that I couldn't get off. I never actually came to work in drag.
They're like, "Josh, you have a lot of glitter on your face."
Oh, so often. And just mascara, you know, because people, you know, when you do drag, you're wiping off tons of makeup every night. So my skin was always raw, and I wasn't pretty during the day.
It's hard to maintain. But what was your drag persona like when you were out at the clubs? I mean, you were a performer or you were a hostess?
I fell down a lot. That was kind of what I was known for.
You were known for crawling on the floor.
Yeah, and taking people home. But no, people always knew me. I was always kind of the nice drag queen.
That's what Misunderstood said about you. She goes, "I don't know what."
I mean,
she absolutely did. I said, "Give us the dirt on this Josh Kilmer Purcell," and she's just like, "Honey, I don't know anything. All I know is that he was very, very nice."
I was a polite drag queen.
Well, I always think that drag
said your please and thank
you. Somebody tips me, and I send a thank you note to them.
Well, don't you think that a lot of people who have day jobs who are entertainers at night sort of like are more balanced in a certain sense?
Yeah, I think there's always a perspective. But it's kind of odd. I didn't know what anybody else did during the daytime, any of the other drag queens.
So you never were asking them, it was like, "So you're a stock trader, you work as a fireman, and
no, 'cause
you're a nanny."
You're a nanny. No, because you are your character when you're out. So we never, ever... I mean, I remember the first time I saw Lady Bunny out of drag, which I would wish on no one.
Do you have pictures?
She wouldn't show up on film.
Now, she's been on the show before, and I think she listens from time to time.
So. Good.
She's the pink mafia in New York.
Is there a little something going on here that we should know about?
No, I love Bunny. I say that's so facetiously.
Since we're talking sort of about drag, I noticed that you sort of said that you did drag.
Yeah.
And do you consider it something you do or something you wear?
Something you are.
And like, how? What do you mean by that exactly?
I do, and I think most other drag queens, I refer to Aqua in the third person. She's actually another person to me, and she's just kind of gone away on a long trip.
Isn't that? I mean, Aqua Desia just a way of you expressing yourself creatively and saying these are the things I want to do as a man, but I'm not. Society doesn't, and I don't feel like I give myself permission to do so.
Yeah, I think I always saw it as an alter ego thing. There were things that I wanted to be, but I was just a shy little kid from Wisconsin, you know, who got beat up all the time, and so I didn't have a lot of confidence or outgoing nature in. Just by putting on that mask, I was able to do that.
It's like, you know, Clark Kent turning into Superman or something in that respect.
Or fish boob woman.
Fish boob lady.
Exactly.
Well, did you always feel like that you got away with doing things that you normally didn't do as Josh?
Hell yeah. Yeah.
What are some of those things?
You know, I could go up. I could make fun of people. You know, bring home half of a ship on Fleet Week.
Oh, really?
Now, do you find the guys were more attracted to you when you were in drag? Like they wanted to have sex with you in drag? Because that's always a question. Because some drag queens are like, "I do not have sex while I'm in drag," or I only have sex while I'm in drag.
Yeah, there's a diverse crowd that goes after drag queens. I mean, some are like hardcore tranny chasers. I never, you know, like I draw a distinct line between transsexuals and transvestites and drag queens.
Sure.
But you know, if the guy was cute, I didn't care what he was chasing. You know, sure, I'm a tranny.
You'll wear anything to get a hot guy in bed. Exactly. You know? It's like, yeah, of course.
Now, in your book, too, you travel to Japan,
mm-hmm.
and you do a TV show, and they take you to, is it a drag queen bar or a tranny bar?
They call it a hostess bar.
A hostess bar.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of hostess bars where it's like you go and it's a real woman.
Yeah, yeah. This is just the, you know, the alternate version of it.
So what was your experience like, you know, for our audiences, like, culturally, like, how do Americans treat drag queens differently than, like, let's say the Japanese?
Yeah, well, in Japan, I don't think that there's so much of a drag culture. I could be totally wrong, but I didn't see it. Over there, it seemed definitely more of a shemale,
mm-hmm.
transsexual thing. I mean, when I went to that bar, I think I call it a drag bar, but it was really a transsexual, shemale ladyboy place.
Mm-hmm.
And those girls turned out, you know, it was a bar, like, just the size of a studio apartment, and they were flipping out new costumes and doing shows like nothing we've ever seen here. I felt like a big, big, stupid birthday clown.
why do you?
Because you're an oversized guy in a way.
I was oversized, like, and I had fish tits, and you know.
Now, how tall are you, Josh? Or?
I'm 6 foot.
Oh, so you're a 6 footer.
Mm. Yeah.
And at that time, how much did you weigh? We're trying to get a picture.
He was tall. He was tall. He's tall and thin. If you see by the picture, you're tall and thin.
I don't know.
Yeah. So you were like a 140.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, because you were like a drag Godzilla, I would imagine, compared to the Japanese.
Oh, completely.
But I was kind of fascinated by the young man, or the older gentleman that he was supporting like a couple of different trannies,
yeah.
and drag queens.
Well, I think that's part of the hostess bar thing. Yeah. No matter straight or gay, is that these are their mistresses, and the bars aren't so much bars as they're just rooms where where they go meet and spend time together.
And so they wanted to spend time, like, you were hired there to do what exactly? Or
I'm not sure. To tell you,
so you got there and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing here.
It was all Japanese, right?
That's happened to me before. It's like,
yeah. I mean, like the TV show, the wedding reception, I honestly, I don't know who paid for me to go there. It was just all a big blur. Thankfully, I was drunk, so, you know.
Well, did you, I mean, it's, how long were you down there?
A week and a half.
So you were able to take time off work, and when you went back, it's, what was the,
you were telling... I mean, it was like that mascot thing that I was talking about. They all thought it was cool, and one of the partners gave me a bunch of yen to take with me.
What is VN?
Yen, the Chinese currency.
Oh, yen. Okay.
Yeah, yen.
Uh-huh. Also, so in the book, let's talk a little bit about Jack.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of like, I was trying to get a fix on this character, and I was just like, you don't really describe him physically very
Jack
much.
Jack is your boyfriend.
Jack
in
is
the
his,
book.
His hustler boyfriend that he mm-hmm. met and fell in love with and moved in with. But you don't describe him very much, but you would describe his apartment to like a T.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it? Are you, like, more into people's homes than the actual person?
Are you all? Walking to a big penthouse, you know, in the sky. It was, like, my first month in New York, and that was all I was thinking. It was, like, penthouse. I don't have to deal with roommates anymore.
So what was Jack like?
Jack,
I imagine as a hustler he was sexy.
Yeah, he was pretty sexy. There is a physical description in the book that I actually had to change, you know, to protect him and myself.
Okay.
But
protect you, how, because you were protecting yourself from him?
Yeah, yeah.
From a lawsuit. Is that what it is? Okay.
Oh, I see. Well, couldn't you say he was like a handsome man with chiseled features and prison sculpted body and hair that just couldn't be controlled? Or
wow, are you getting a little hot?
Well, I'm always like, you know, everybody has that fantasy of hooking up with a
some hot hustler.
Hot hustler. Disease-free, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
With lots of money.
Maybe a little rough.
Yeah, he was a little rough. I'd love to tell you exactly what he looked like, but I can't.
Okay.
Well, so he had like a defining feature or something? Is that, I mean, was he a blonde or a brunette? Or?
We can talk about his genitalia.
Okay.
That's pretty...
Tell us about it.
This is not the Michael Jackson trial, Josh.
it was large.
Oh, well, I would imagine as a hustler,
you have to have the goods, you know.
Yeah.
So didn't you kind of feel like, I mean, how much What's the trepidation did you have, like, feeling about, like, oh my, do I really want to date a hustler? Or was he just so fabulous, so charismatic that you were just like, I'm throwing caution to the wind?
That never even crossed my mind. I've never had, like, a real moral... I've never had a moral dilemma in my life.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I had no problem with that. And people questioned at the time, my friends, you know, like, oh, how can you sleep with someone that's sleeping with somebody else? But I've never viewed relationships as you know, it has to be all about sex, you know. It's just
right.
Like, that was his job, and that's what he did. And after seeing his clients, I wasn't really afraid of him running away with them, so...
What was the clientele was like older gay men?
Yeah, almost every one of his clients, actually they weren't gay men. Almost every one of his clients were very successful straight men, because he was a S&M escort.
Oh, so he was like wrestling Tom Cruise and people like that.
Exactly. Well, like there were a lot of business executive people, and this is what I always surmised, was that everyone around them tells them yes. Their employees, their wife, their kids, everyone tells them yes because they were very powerful people. And a lot of them had gone to mistresses before because they're straight.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this craving for humiliation that they really only got from going to another guy. You know, like the homosexuality added another level of humiliation for them.
Oh, so they're not necessarily gay, but they were just sort of like wanting to be humiliated.
So oftentimes he wouldn't even necessarily have sex with these people. He would just...
Exactly.
Where can I get that job?
I know. I know. Yeah.
You know? But did he ever do sort of a, you know, play acting or roles in the bedroom with you? Or
No. That was to be honest, we didn't have that great of a sex life. So.
Well, imagine he was, you know, that's that's why I couldn't date a hustler, because he'd be out having, I'd be like, I'd want it all myself.
I know.
Well, and you're always like, he's in bed with you going, you know, I couldn't be making money right now.
Yeah, he would just go to my wallet and take a few bucks out every time.
Well, I mean, what was sort of your impetus for putting all these delicate private moments into a memoir? What at this point in your life, because you're still relatively a young man?
Thank you.
Why at this point in your life you wanted to put all this stuff behind you or to document it in a book?
Well, actually, I'd been writing Little Aqua stories all along, but I knew that if I wanted to sell a book, there had to be something more universal about it. And that's when I started exploring the relationship with Jack. That's when you say, why didn't I put it all behind me? I realized that all of us, like a housefrau in Nebraska has a bad, like, quote, bad boyfriend sometime in their youth. And we all grow up and we all say, oh yeah, when I was younger, I was crazy. I dated this crackhead hooker. It was so funny, haha. But I realized that there was actually, I still love Jack, and that was a really important time to me. And so I think we all dismiss these, you know, so-called crazy things we do as in our youth, and they're really important. So that's what I wanted to explore and see if people would relate to.
And that's why you wanted to make it into a book.
Yeah. Because I just found it intriguing. I'm like, you know, I've been joking about this for years, but it's something that still affects me to this day.
Did you ever consider, like, blogging about all this, or as a writer?
No, I'm not that technical with things.
And blogging doesn't pay the bills.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, so what was my next question going to be? So I wanted to get to, like, the you were in the book, you described being gay bashed by these two guys. And I was wondering, do you find that happens a lot? Is that do most drag queens have that experience where they get picked up by some guy and get beaten up?
I think most drag queens were smarter than I was, but
yeah. Well, you were also, how drunk were you?
Yeah, I drank a lot. So, I mean, it happened a few more times than what I put in the book, but I don't think it's endemic of anything other than my lack of judgment.
No, this isn't just beating. This is like blaming the victim here, isn't it?
Yeah, well... I mean,
come on! It's like
myself.
These guys. You were under the impression that you guys were going to have a good time, and you went to your apartment in costume with them, right?
Yeah.
And then what? And what was the sort of the sequence of events there?
And that particular incident?
Yeah.
That was they were two brothers, and I mean you got to remember when throwing drugs and booze in the mix throws a whole.
And they were intoxicated as well.
Yeah, and one of them seemed more gay to me, and he was the one that wanted to try on my wigs, and he wanted to try on the stuff, and I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, but all right, you do that because your brother's cute. I'll stay out here with your brother, and then when the more gay one came out, the other brother wanted us to fool around a little bit, and as soon as we started fooling around, he just went into a rage. And I mean, I think there was something sexual between the two brothers. It's so ludicrous that I can't really even parse it so that it makes any sense. But
and what was going on in your mind when everything sort of went wrong?
What's going on? How did this happen? Where is this violent reaction coming from? I remember laying on the floor. I mean, the one thing I remember I put in the book, I remember laying on the floor watching him hit me and then thinking, like, how is it possible if someone's hitting you in the eye to watch them hitting you in the eye? You know, it was just all very surreal.
Were you worried?
Over like that.
Were you worried for your life at that point?
Not really, because I've always, everything that I've always done, no matter how crazy it is, I've always felt like I was kind of observing it. There's always that Midwestern little boy in me observing what's going on. Not judging, but giving it some sort of perspective on it. So I should have been more fearful, but I usually wasn't. I was always intrigued.
Were you kind of detached?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm always intrigued by... I was the kind of kid that went to the freak show and when I was little or watched That's Incredible, and you'd see the guy with lizard skin, and I didn't care about the lizard skin. I wanted to see what his kids looked like and what kind of car he drove, you know?
So you kind of transform in a way. You've kind of transformed yourself into a freak of sorts.
Yeah, and in writing the book, that's why when I was writing the Aqua stories that were very just ha ha funny funny. What really intrigued me was what do drag queens do when they go home? You know, do they stand up? Do they sit down to pee? You know, what do they eat for breakfast?
So you were wanting her sort of the grocery store at the post office.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, your description of what you went through to transform yourselves into Aqua, I was just amazed. Because you wouldn't pee in your costume.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I actually pee in my costume coming home because I've been holding it so long.
Oh, my God.
So why don't you just, like, put some Depends on or something, you know?
Too bulky.
Too bulky. Ruin the shape.
At least a little, female maxi pad that'll get you into character, you know? So.
I'm glad you like that. I almost didn't put that in the book.
Oh no, I loved the transformation because it was just I'll give a brief description to the readers. So basically, you took a long bath, you shaved twice, you made sure to take a shit because you didn't want to shit or pee in your outfit, and then the corsets and the eye makeup and the everything. So because it was like a 3-hour transformation.
Yeah, yeah. And I almost didn't write about that because I didn't think anyone cared, and it was my now boyfriend that said, I want to know. Write this down.
People want to know.
That chapter is very clinical. It's just like, mm-hmm. I do this.
But I found it interesting. Definitely found it interesting. Especially, I think anybody that's got any kind of theater background or anything like that would find it interesting.
Let's talk about your boyfriend right now. How's he sort of look back upon these events in the past?
Well, he's pretty okay with it. But again, mm-hmm. that goes back to the whole thing about we all have these really powerful love stories in our past, and just because we have someone we love dearly today doesn't mean that we have to automatically erase those past feelings. And I think he's thought about that, and I'm obviously not going to leave him for a crackhead hooker, and we both know that what we have now is forever, so I he's pretty comfortable with it all.
So now, Clive Barker, the infamous mm-hmm. horror film director, has optioned your book to be made into a movie.
Is this true?
Yeah.
How do you feel about your movie being
made into a
movie?
For those of you who don't know who British filmmaker Clive Barker is, he's the guy who made Hellraiser and Candyman, the pinhead guy.
And Gods and Monsters.
And Gods and Monsters.
That's the other side of him. I was actually, it was optioned as a movie before it was bought as a book.
Wow.
I'd written the book. I was sitting on a plane coming back from France, and I met a guy named Joe Daly, who is Clive's executive producer. And I had the book written, but it hadn't gone out to any publishers. And the poor guy almost threw up when he found out he was on a transatlantic flight next to somebody pitching him a project.
Yeah. Oh, but, how awful.
Isn't that horrible? And
but you sold it to him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great guy, and we became instant friends. And he took it back to L.A. and read it and loved it. Clive read it and loved it. They said they wanted to option it as a movie. I said, that's great, but there's nothing to option yet. And Clive called up Harper Collins and had his editor read it.
It's like, make this book.
So are they in production for this, or?
Well, I just finished the screenplay over the holidays, and now it's out with directors.
Wow, great! Who's going to play Aqua?
You can't say.
Nobody
that.
Knows, right? Or you don't know? Or do you have somebody?
They have a list, but I'm afraid if I say anything,
yeah,
it'll
I understand.
Jinx it,
I understand.
Yeah.
Are these big names, or would it
they've
be somebody
some,
we know?
Yeah, they've got some big names. I have an odd preference that it actually is sort of an unknown. That it would be an unknown.
So Clay Aiken is not going to be playing it.
No, I can guarantee you that.
Or Tom Cruise. He's in every movie these days, you know. He's a Scientologist.
Tom Cruise could do it.
In case you didn't know.
I think he's too short, though. Aqua's got to be tall, right?
Yeah.
Because you were 7'2" in heels.
Well, why don't you play it? I mean, it's like, you know, you were... That's the thing I always find it weird. It's like when the person that is alive... Well, like when the, you know, why not have Josh Kilmer Purcell do it?
Because I don't fit in the outfit
anymore. I'm too old.
It's like, we need someone a little bit more screen friendly.
Yeah.
In the beginning of this book, how old were you when this started? I just wanted to ask.
When I first started doing drag, when the book started.
When the book started.
Book started, I was 26.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to ask one thing, though. Do you see this book being made into a film as a horror film? I mean, that's the thing I wanted to ask. Is like, this guy?
I mean, I guess if you're a Baptist woman or something, it would be definitely a horror. Clive is actually a great artist, too. But it's all very dark, and in a way, that's why he's the perfect person. Like Gods and Monsters, you know, Oscar-nominated, and... it's a very dark story, but it's also really artful. And I kind of feel the same way about this. We were really cautious. We didn't want anyone else. I didn't, and they also didn't want anyone else to write the screenplay because too often, how many good movies about drag queens are there? It's all about the glitter and the stupid club music.
And it's always very maudlin, too, though, if it has any kind of, you know, heart or whatever.
Yeah. And we wanted to keep a real kind of gritty aspect to it. And it's not just about a drag queen. That's it. That's what I think is hard for the role. I mean, the person has to play two very distinct characters.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. Where do you want to go next? So let's talk about... Uh-huh. Now, your book is a memoir. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of frap, like, in the past couple weeks about memoirs.
Yeah.
Now, has your book come under any scrutiny? Have you had the people at HarperCollins going, is this true? On page 166,
explain to the listeners why you're bringing this up. Because James Frey,
right,
author of A Million Little Pieces, on the front cover of the book, gives you a recommendation. So has that been a challenge, or has that changed anything for you?
You know, there's negatives and positives to it. The negatives are obvious, but the positives are it has gotten a lot more review attention because of that. People asking the question you're asking.
Mm-hmm. And what's the answer to that question?
It's a very different circumstance. My publisher wanted, actually more out of her own interest, she wanted all the pictures and documentation and club flyers, passport, you know, like I gave that to her years ago, you know, when she first bought it. So they've got an extensive documentation. She has contact information for Jack.
So someone fact checked and called Jack?
No, we don't want to call Jack. I've called Jack, and there's a little bit at the end of the book about when I think you have the advance copy, but in the release book, there's a little section about the phone call that I had with him.
Right. I didn't want to give it away.
Okay. So I have a disclaimer in mind too. That's more extensive than probably what I actually need.
Oh, I didn't see the disclaimer. Where's that in the front?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Even though James Friend liked this book, it's still...
Okay.
Or something like that.
You know, that is so funny. I'm reading a disclaimer now. It says, this is a memoir of a certain time in my life. All of the names of major characters and other identifying details have been changed, and some of the characters described are composites of various people and experiences I had then. It's the truth in drag. And that is, when I saw this book, because I have to say, I actually saw this book before... we had Mrs. Slocum, who is a fan of ours, gave us the contact information. And I looked at the book and I said, oh, I wonder what kind of crazy lies this drag queen's going to say, you know? But I love that you said that it's the truth in drag, because that's kind of what the perception I had was going to be, that it's going to be a drag queen's perception
take
of a
things.
Memoir. Because, you know, as a drag queen, in a way, it's kind of a lie.
I mean, a drag queen, you know, is a lie, you know?
It's a you know, changing the ideas of perception and stuff like that. And so, but you know, I'm very comfortable with that, especially coming from a drag queen. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to get all Oprah.
Yeah, but slamming me. Yeah,
you know. But you, on the other hand, you don't jump on our sofa, okay?
Yeah,
because this sofa is expensive, honey. I got it from Crate and Barrel. I had to do terrible things to get it.
But when this whole fray happened about the Fray book, was it did your publisher contact you again and say, like, we just want to make sure about this kind of thing or something like that?
No, because
something like that happened.
They had everything covered.
Okay.
Long ago, everything that people have been slamming the publishing industry for, they did. You know, they didn't do what the rest of the publishing industry does. They investigated and questioned me. And there, I mean, there is an element of trust between an editor and an author.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very good that I did give her everything that she needed to feel comfortable. And now I'm, of course, extremely glad because everyone asked me about it. Everyone's asking her about it. And we can just pick up this big packet of paper and say, here's everything you need to know.
So people have been sort of putting some sort of pressure on your publisher.
I think her, you know, her colleagues, they're just curious. I mean, HarperCollins is fantastic. Harper Perennial is the imprint, and they're fantastic. They've always been interested. They've always wanted to see pictures and this and that. So I wouldn't say a pressure, but there's just added interest in knowing more about my story. And what's interesting is I chose to have all my friends that knew both me and Jack write letters of, you know, unprompted of what to say, but how they described the apartment, how they would describe him, memories they have, and they came up with actually better stories than I remember. So.
Did you take some of that copy or no?
No, it's sadly the book was already done.
Wow. Well, you could do a follow-up,
exactly,
like the Cliff Notes, you know.
DVD extra.
You could print your own Cliff Notes for your own book. Because, like, let's say a lot of drag queens, you know, they're not exactly the most book-heavy bunch. So maybe like a 3-page pamphlet.
Exactly.
Version of your book might sell really well, you know, if you put it in a vending machine next to like cigarettes at a gay bar.
Just all pictures, maybe.
Yeah, as a picture book
with little free cosmetic samples.
Well, you're pretty close friends with James Frey, then.
I met him through his wife.
And through his wife, what was sort of your reaction when? I mean, did you see Oprah sort of tearing him a new asshole on her show? And
yeah,
what was your reaction to that?
What is my reaction?
Yeah, I mean, were you like, oh?
Well, I mean, as a friend, it's terribly, terribly difficult to watch, and I don't even feel like I can comment as a writer, because they have been close friends, and I don't like the sanctimony of a lot of writers that have been stepping up and saying, this is what a memoir is, goddammit, you know, this is how you write one, and because I don't think any artist, writer, anybody should have rules applied to them. I mean, publishing world can put the rules on, or art galleries, they can put the rules on what it should be. But I don't like other writers standing up and you know, kicking them.
Yeah, and especially like comparing the memoir to you know, Lies of the Holocaust. It was like, God, it's so extreme.
Yeah, that was do you think that the negative response towards James Frey's, you know, lies in his memoir has been sort of a backlash against the success of the book?
I think it has to be, because I've never seen anyone vilified. And we also have to remember that James Frey was a drug, you know, an alcohol addict. He was, and he recovered, and that's the story of the book. And maybe my judgment is clouded because I know him now, and I know him, you know, he is a recovered addict and a very successful one. So to me, I find it horrifying that people are overlooking that truth, that he struggled very hard to overcome an addiction.
Well, if anything will drive you to drink, it's certainly something like this.
I know. I mean, watching what he's gone through has just about turned me back into an alcoholic. So.
Thank God.
More Aquavelva.
Yeah. Let's drink to that.
I'll drink. Well, and in a sense, that do you feel that he shouldn't have done those things in his book? I mean, do you feel that? Do you stand by his decision to write his book the way he did? Or?
I mean, I think he's said everything he's needed to say about it. I can only stand by as a friend, and as I would with any friend. But I don't want to jump on that bandwagon.
Okay.
You know, because they're dear friends, and I'm watching them be hurt.
Struggle.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I'll struggle, be hurt all the way to the bank, because it's, you know, I mean, I, if anything, this has probably helped sell that book and, you know, make it more successful. I don't know if it's hurt his credibility to write future books, but since you always write a memoir is sort of like a very difficult transition as a writer to write other books, mm-hmm. isn't it?
I think some people say that you either are a nonfiction or a fiction writer, but I don't necessarily believe that. I think you can do both, and I think he definitely he still has the fans. This is, you know, the other thing that the media isn't saying. But if you go look at Oprah's website right now, you know, 75% of the house frows on there are bitching at Oprah.
Yeah.
So that's not being. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of the public is just shrugging their shoulders at the whole thing.
Mm. Why do you think Oprah reacted the way she did?
Because I think she has a brand to protect.
So she's protecting her brand?
I believe so. I mean, I really doubt that Oprah lost a whole lot of sleep over, you know.
She seemed mad, though. I was like,
she seemed mad.
I was like, ooh, was she's going to slap
a side
him.
I've never seen before. I was.
It was
like,
a strange
wow.
thing. Well, now you know how, you know, all the people who work for these big, powerful media companies, you know, like us.
Now everybody knows how I feel.
And she had that great schoolmarm, like severe hairdo.
It was very schoolgirl, very very nun-like in a way. Going to Catholic school and stuff, it seemed like that kind of like I'm just embarrassed.
Well, I thought it was it's a scary thing, but it's like, didn't anybody have a sense of humor about this? Like, you know, it just seemed to me like a. Yeah. Perfect opportunity to make a crack a joke or something, and it seems like James was about to like start crying on the show. It was like, you know,
I mean, I can't really speak to his reactions and things, but
I was just like,
I wouldn't want to be there.
Well, honey, I was
hot,
like
on Oprah's hot seat. Come
I'd
on
be
on.
Like, Oprah, don't you push me against a corner because I'll jump on your sofa.
I know
how that pisses you off. I'll be like, I'll bring out Katie Holmes.
You know, I went to the original Oprah show, the book club show.
Yeah.
And the people in the audience are obsessed about that couch, that white couch.
So
they
well,
because it wasn't on stage before the show, and they all wanted they
want to
oh,
touch
really?
It.
They have to wheel it out so that people don't, you know.
I don't know. It was so funny because somebody in the audience first asked, "Where's Oprah going to come out from?" And
the couch.
Yeah, and somebody, "Where's Oprah coming out from?" And the producer's like, Could be anywhere, you know, like whipping the crowd in front of the seat. And then somebody else said, where's the couch going to come in from?
The couch is a big star. It has its own dressing room.
I know.
Doesn't she always come in through the same door?
No, she likes to surprise.
Oh, she does?
She surprises. Oh, she sometimes will be sitting in the audience, dressed up as a white skinny woman, and she lifts off. Like, ha. Well, the interesting thing, if you ever watch, for those of you who don't know or watch the Oprah Winfrey Show, as they bring out guests, it's a sectional sofa.
Yes.
So it magically transforms between the breaks into like a two-piece, a three-piece, a chaise lounge.
And I'm not a big fan of sectionals, but that's a nice one.
I love sectionals.
They're hard to make work. Well, in New York, we have such small spaces, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we have a sort of a sectional here from Crate and Barrel. And
yeah, you're all over that Crate and Barrel.
Oh, honey, I had to do terrible things to get that sofa.
I don't think they were so terrible now, were they?
I had to work. A horrible job.
What color is it? I want to order one online.
It's sort of a sage gray sofa.
Doesn't work. It's too big.
It's too big for this apartment. But see, I was excited when I was moving in here, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get a sofa.
Are you totally not letting anyone like drink wine on it and all that?
Oh, I'm a Nazi. Yeah.
That'll last like a month.
Mm-hmm. I'm a sofa Nazi.
Yeah.
I was like, sit over there.
No eating. But so when do you think this movie will come out for the I Am Not Myself These Days?
Oh, it's such a long process, and who knows if it'll ever get off the ground. That's what I'm learning about Hollywood it's like a lot of meetings.
Well, Hollywood Line's taken like a decade to get her book.
Love that book.
Isn't that a good book?
It is a great book.
It's like you know what Amazon should do?
Bundle.
Bundle yours and hers together.
Do you know who mine is bundled with right now?
Who?
Who's?
The Paul Lynde story.
No
oh,
way.
No.
For like $22 and then you get both.
Honey, I read that book. I was just like, what a jerk he was.
Trying to get an interview with Paul Lynde, but the publishers didn't return our calls.
Well, he kept saying he was dead or something. I don't know.
I was like, well, he's dead tired of being interviewed. But, yeah, it was like, so what is your reaction to that?
What?
Do your Paul Lynde, Fausto.
What's your reaction to that, Josh Kilmer Purcell?
Honey, I ordered like three bundles because, you know, that Paul Lynde book doesn't go on sale a lot.
Oh.
And it's a good deal. $22, both books.
Why not? And they can buy that on Amazon?
Yeah, they can actually go through our website, feastoffools.net, and click on the little link, and you can get the double duo of the Paul Lynde story and I Am Not Myself These Days. And Josh, we want to thank you so much for coming onto our show and bearing your soul with us.
Thank you for having me. You guys are great. I love listening to you.
Oh, really? You're a fan?
Yes.
Right.
Recently turned on by Mrs. Slocum.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Well shout out to Mrs. Slocum.
We love you, Mrs. Slocum. Keep them coming, Slow.
Keep them coming fast.
Hey, Josh, can I ask you, do you have any other pictures of Aqua? Because all we got is the publicist one. And we wanted to have like a little couple if we could.
Is that possible? Where should I email to?
feastoffools@gmail.com.
Okay. I'm having a little problem with email today for some reason.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, if you can get that, because we'll probably post this tonight. So.
Okay, maybe I'll do it through the internet account.
Yeah, the internet really helps with the email.
Just put your fish boobs on. Hey, I got a question. I mean, do you still have the costume? And are you like gonna, you know, do you ever now and then pull her out of the closet and say, okay, here she is?
It's all in storage. I mean,
so you still have it though?
I still have the wigs and all that stuff were destroyed when the water.
So when was the last time you wore it for the publicity shot for the book? Is that it?
Yeah.
That's the last time.
Oh, and that is so airbrushed.
Honey, you don't have to tell us. We're the kings and queens of airbrushing.
Yeah, I'm a professional. See, I also work as a graphic designer.
Really?
Yeah. So during the day, I know exactly what you're going through.
I was trying to find Star Jones's airbrusher to work on mine, but
honey, all they do
he ran out of air.
They get
nice one.
They get a cup of Crisco and slap that thing on the lens and say, "Here you go, SJ."
Exactly.
You know,
just smile with their Skeletor face.
Well, James, we want to thank you so much for talking to us. Again, the name of the book is I Am Not Myself These Days.
A memoir.
A memoir available through HarperCollins.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with a Tom Collins, which is a delicious beverage.
Well, or to be confused. I'm fine with that.
And the author is Josh Kilmer Purcell.
Who is that name again?
Josh Kilmer Purcell.
And they're going to be making it into a movie. Is there any way that your fans can sort of like lobby to get this movie made?
That's a good question. Yeah, I'll have to think about that. If they go on the website, maybe they can email me and I can...
Well, you have our vote.
Use the army for good.
I want to play the role of a misunderstood in the movie. I'll eat.
Oh, you're far too young, and I don't even know you.
No. But see, I'm going to be like Al Pacino and train for it by eating a lot. You know that movie that he did when he got really fat?
Oh, yeah, they all do that.
I'll eat... Stuff I'm gonna get my ass kicked.
We gotta give her a little bit of shade. The bitch is going to Thailand for a month.
I know. Aren't you jealous?
I know. Where's she? Is Thailand? That's where she's going.
Yeah.
Yes. T.
Or maybe we weren't supposed to tell anyone.
E. Is that my
and so
thai?
On.
Is that where my thai comes from?
Siam.
So, Josh, are you working on any other books or any other projects in the future?
Yeah, I do have. I have a novel, fiction.
But you'll sell it as a memoir?
Yeah. Just kidding.
Everything's a memoir now. What the hell?
I flew into outer space. A memoir.
so I've got a novel that's going to be going to HarperCollins in the next few weeks.
Excellent. Well, you'll have to come back and talk to us about it.
Thanks. Wish me luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You're welcome. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Talk to you. Bye.
Take care. Bye. Josh Kilmer Purcell lives in New York City with his husband. I don't know if he's his husband.
I don't know. Partner.
His partner. Boyfriend, his lover. Boyfriend, lover. His new
Non-hooker
book.
Non-hooker lover.
His new book, I Am Not Myself These Days, is available for purchase on our website, feastoffools.net.
And on the front cover of the book, James Frey, author of A Million Little Pieces, the runaway controversial bestseller, says about Josh's book, quote, a wonderful book, a ridiculous book, a sad and beautiful book, a book I'll read again, a book I highly recommend, end quote.
And one that is The Truth in Drag.
The Truth in Drag.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the show.
Yes. If you'd like to email us, please email us at feastoffools@gmail.com. Share us your thoughts about the show on the website, www.feastoffools.net.
And we would love to have you help us get a sponsor. On our website, on the very left side, fill out our audience survey. Tell us what you think about the show. Share your thoughts about how we can improve. And of course, give us high ratings, girlfriends, because we need a sponsor. Mm-hmm. I'm Fausto Fornos.
And I'm Mark Fillion.
Take care.
Bye-bye. The dude.